The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 3 minutes past nine. It's Tuesday, the 24th of October, 2023. Very welcome along to the programme. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're well, this morning across the Northwest or wherever you're listening to us today. We really appreciate you being on board. We want you involved in the chat and the conversation. 08660 25000. That line is open now. And let me just say that the text and WhatsApp line, if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening overnight, hopefully you get off to bed soon. If you're listening overnight, you can text us at that time as well, and we'll pick up those texts as well. So whether you're listening to the podcast or rewatching the stream or listening overnight on the radio, don't be afraid, not that you would be, but don't be afraid to take your phone out and send us a message, because we can carry that over and use it the next day. 07491 25000, that's the number, live when we're on air. Caroline taking your calls today. And again, you can email us at any time from anywhere, comments at highlandradio.com. Right, lots to get through today. Of course, community guard information coming up a little bit later and so much more besides. Let's start with the newspapers and the Irish Times this morning. Anti-terrorism Gardaí worked with overseas security agencies to determine if Yusuf Palini, who was yesterday sentenced to life for the murder of two gay men, was engaged in terrorism. The presence of €350,000 in cash in two suitcases in Palini's home in Sligo town raised fears he had been paid by an Islamic terrorism group to carry out the attacks. However, Gardaí concluded that there was no outside groups or individuals involved in the attack. A sentencing hearing at the Central Criminal Court yesterday heard Gardaí did not believe Palini was radicalised, despite some suggestion to the contrary. The 23-year-old murdered local men Michael Snee and Aidan Moffat and seriously assaulted Anthony Burke during a four-day spree of violence in Sligo town. Gardaí believe he would have continued to kill gay men if he'd not been arrested. In fact, he said that himself during questioning. But what was that money for? Where did it come from? And how can Gardaí be so sure that he worked alone? Well, they must have some information that's not carried in the newspapers today. Right, well, on to the Irish Independent now. And I'm reading this out because I never really tried to put a number on it myself, but I was quite shocked at the number. A quarter of adults in Ireland, nearly 1 million people, lived with a problem drinker as a child, according to a study carried out by Maynooth University. The Adverse Childhood Experience Comparison study found significant association between post-traumatic stress disorder and having a problem drinker in the home. It highlights the population's high level of alcohol use as a likely contributor. This week, Alcohol Action Ireland is hosting a series of events as part of its Silent Voices initiative, aiming to highlight the lasting impact growing up with a problem drinker can have on young people into adulthood. Is that something that resonates with you? One in four of us grew up in a house with a problem drinker. Quite a bit about passwords across the papers today. Irish people are being urged to stop using easily guessed passwords such as, now, hands up if you're using this password, though I can't really, it wouldn't be fair for me to ask you to message in, would it? Because it'd be like I was trying to get your password. But here are some of the passwords that people use. 123456 is a password that's very common. And some people try and be clever and spell it out. So it's like O-N-E-T-W-O-T-H-R-E-E and so on. Password, still to this day and age, is quite a popular password. And another, Liverpool. So if I've read out any of your passwords there, I strongly suggest you change them, because they're associated as being some of the most commonly weak used passwords, or commonly used weak passwords. According to research from Cork-based organisation Cyber Skills and the security website HaveIBeenPwned.com, 123456 remains the most guessable password in the world, appearing in more than 37 million breached accounts, according to security records. So you know how people get hacked, companies get hacked. Well, passwords then get released, so they're able to check what passwords people have. The password password appears in 9.7 million breach documents, while Liverpool turns up 448,000 times. Other commonly easily guessed passwords included 111111, And but the full word, 808,000 of you out there somewhere use FU with the full spelling as your password. Letamine is very popular as well. Don't I even know what that word is. Letamine, L-E-T. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, so if I've guessed your password in reading that article, folks, it is time to change. Okay, and let us know your any stories you have in relation to that. 08660 25,000. What do you think about this? A referendum on a united Ireland should require a supermajority to pass, according to Steve Baker, the UK's Minister of State for Northern Ireland. Yesterday, Mr. Baker told the 65th plenary of the British-Irish Parliament Assembly at the K Club in County Kildare that the referendum probably should have been a supermajority at least 60%. Mr. Baker, who was strident supporter of Britain withdrawing from the European Union, made the remarks when responding to a question about whether he had any regrets from the Brexit campaign. He said, "One regret is it probably should have been a supermajority. That's a huge thing for me to say, because if it had been a supermajority, we'd have lost and we'd still be in." But it's easy to ask for forgiveness rather than permission, though, isn't it? He's clever, because he knew he'd be caught out in that question if he didn't say that. But the reason I say that is if we'd had to have 60%, everyone would have abided by the result. So generally speaking, I suppose there can be an argument made for it. But to get a 60% majority about the future of the North, that's going to take quite some time, isn't it? And I think most people might be against that. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. A shocking story here of the mistreatment of a child in the Irish Daily Star. A father charged with child neglect after his infant daughter was allegedly abandoned in a car for 10 hours in Dublin at the weekend has been remanded on bail pending directions from the DPP. A man raised the alarm in Clondalkin Garda Station at around 2 a.m. on Saturday, resulting in a major guard operation. The baby girl was found safe and well at around 4 a.m. following a two-hour search. She was taken to Temple Street University Hospital and given the all clear. The accused, who is in his 30s and cannot be identified, is charged with an offence under Section 246 of the Children's Act. He appeared at Dublin District Court yesterday. It's alleged he assaulted, neglected and neglected or abandoned a child in a manner likely to cause suffering, injury from Friday to Saturday in West Dublin. 10 hours that wee dolt was in a car on its own. Awful, awful, awful situation. If you are a blood donor, if you've considered it and you can, there's an urgent need for blood. The Irish Daily Mirror, amongst other papers, an urgent appeal has been made to blood donors to give blood as supplies have plummeted. The national stock for blood groups, especially O negative, A negative and B negative, have fallen to just below 3 days supply in recent weeks. The Irish Blood Transfusion Service aims to have 7 days of supply at all times. The IBTTS Director of Donor Services and Logistics, Paul McKinney, said all donations are needed to avoid any impact on our hospital system. And I presume they need more going into a bank holiday. And with Easter holidays, maybe people are not Easter. I keep saying it's Easter. It's not. It's Halloween. But with Halloween holidays, maybe people are less likely to give blood. But they're down to 3 days supply and they need 7. Finally, on health. And I have great sympathy for everyone down in Limerick or anyone who has to visit Limerick University Hospital. It's apparently a really good hospital, but they have serious issues with overcrowding. And we know what that's like up here at Letterkenny University Hospital in terms of overcrowding. And I'm going to read the story, but we've had unprecedented, there's nowhere in the country ever, and I'm sorry to go on about this again, okay, we're not talking about this much today because some of you might go, well, he's not on about the hospital again, is he? But it's just really important. Just to put into context, we've had 78 GPs, as you know at this stage, 11 consultants write letters to their manager, the manager of the hospital, the head of the Sealta group, who we had on the show yesterday, the health minister, and they have said, in A&E, but right across the hospital, there is a serious lack of services. They've warned of barbaric conditions. They've warned of people's outcomes being poor. GPs afraid to or reticent to send people to the A&E because of the potential negative outcomes. Nothing like that really has ever happened across the country, where you've got 90 medical professionals saying there is an issue. And that all that information, the GP's letters, the consultants' letters, were sent to national media, as well, I presume. Well, I kind of know. They were posted on Twitter. Many, many journalists right across the country would have seen what was going on up here in Letterkenny. And if the truth be told, I think the Mirror did a double page spread over the weekend, and fair play to them. But if the truth be told, no one in the national media picked it up. They didn't pick it up at all. Obviously, they looked at it and went, well, it's Donegal, or it's not really that big a deal, or it won't sell any papers, or whatever. So, and now, if I missed anything, please let me know. 086 60 25,000, and I will express, I will apologise and point to what was published directly. But then we have the situation of a widow of a man who died in an overcrowded hospital. She said she would rather be left at home to die than go there. This is one lady who was speaking about the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. Now, that's a very familiar story to us, but the difference is it's everywhere. This story, as it relates to University Hospital Limerick, is everywhere. RTE did 20 minutes on it this morning. And this is, in terms of overcrowding, I don't believe Limerick has the same issues that we have here in terms of the other services which we talked about yesterday. 20 minutes they talked about it on Morning Ireland. And then it was on News Talk as well. And then it was on the service that News Talk sends out to independent media right across the country. Everywhere this story is about Limerick University Hospital, all over the national papers. A number of hospitals, and in fairness, it's not just the media. This is not a criticism, it's an observation. Sinn Féin's health spokesperson was on Morning Ireland this morning. No mention of Letterkenny University Hospital. Now, I know he's coming up here to meet GPs, but this was an opportunity on the national media. No mention of Letterkenny University Hospital. There was 5, 6, 7 other hospitals mentioned that are in crisis, and Letterkenny University Hospital was neither mentioned by the media outlet nor Sinn Féin's health spokesperson this morning. Now, I'm not saying he hasn't mentioned it in the past, but I'm just saying, even though there's been like 2 weeks of full-on, can someone please listen to us up here as to the situation? And as I say, I don't begrudge Limerick and the surrounds for their issue, because wait till you see how this story rolls now. Stephen Donnelly probably will go down to Limerick before he comes up to Donegal, because it's on News Talk, it's on RTE, and it's in all the papers. Letterkenny, us up here, no one took us on really at all, except that double page spread in the Mirror on Saturday, I believe it was. No one took us on. And the story, it's just going to drift away, isn't it? Nothing's going to change. That's how people might feel. What do you think? 086 60 25. It's just an observation of sometimes how the media works and how we find ourselves going, well, it's different up here, or we're treated different up here, or, well, sure, it's Donegal, who cares? You can only sort of kind of go by what you see in the evidence, can't you? And it kind of looks like that. But as I say, maybe that's just my interpretation. Let me know what you think. 086 60 25,000. We'll be back with our first guest shortly. We're joined on the programme now by author Paul Gosling. Paul, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
It's great to have you on the programme. Now, you've been writing about what perhaps could be done for us here in the Northwest to improve our situation. And whilst a lot of people listening might be aware that we have sort of a Northwest city status where the local councils work together, you believe we need to go much further than that, do you, for the betterment of the Northwest as a whole?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. My argument is that Derry and Donegal are inextricably linked economically, and that the weaknesses in the economy in Derry is very similar to the weaknesses in the economy in Donegal. So we've got high unemployment and low pay. And one of the reasons for this is that there's no coherent strategy in terms of promoting investment and skill development in the Northwest because of the border. So, for example, Invest Northern Ireland doesn't really recognise that there's a cross-border labour market. So it's not saying to potential investors to come to Derry, we'll recognise not only the labour market skills in Derry, but also those across the border in Donegal. But equally, we've not got the skills that we need to support local businesses to expand. And that's because Derry has a small university campus at McGee. It needs to be significantly larger. So I think the way to get that is to recognise that Donegal, as well as Derry, is badly served by the small size of the university in Derry. And therefore, what we need is the two governments to work together, whether that's the Northern Ireland government, if it ever gets back in running, or the British government. But clearly, the Irish government needs to be involved in recognising, as I know it does on some levels, that actually Derry needs that level of support in order for Donegal to do better.
Is it any coincidence the situation we find ourselves in and us both areas being so far removed in both instances from the where the decisions are made?
Absolutely. I think that is always the case. And this isn't just about what happens on the island of Ireland. You can tell from my accent I'm English. And, you know, it's very similar that the northeast of England is the weakest region of England. And you have that sense that the places that are geographically furthest away from the centres of power are actually marginalised also in terms of political power. It's not necessarily conscious, but it happens. And Donegal, of course, you know, has such weak infrastructural links to the centre of power within Ireland that it makes it very difficult to get the movement that is needed in terms of getting the economy working. And the only way, because particularly Donegal's geographical marginalisation, the only way that Donegal can strengthen its economy is through closer cooperation across the border.
And do you believe that this is just an attitude situation, i.e. if both governments, when both governments are there and up and running, that it's an agreement or an attitude, or is this something that requires, you know, because of the cross-border element, something more complicated, or is it simply just a will being there to cooperate?
I think there's different issues on the two sides of the border. I don't think there's any political ill will towards Donegal from Dublin. It is simply that it's difficult to get things moving. In terms of the Northwest on this side of the border in Northern Ireland, yes, I think it's quite clear there's been a history of sectarian decision-making. And that sectarianism isn't just about religion, it's also about geographical location. And I think that's absolutely clear. And I've previously worked as an advisor to one of the MLAs in Northern Ireland, Sinéad McLaughlin. And we found that when we put in questions to the DUP economy minister, for example, saying that Derry should be promoted as the city that connects the Wild Atlantic Way with the Causeway Coast, the response that we got was that from the DUP minister, well, these are competing attractions, therefore we can't cooperate. And I think you get that same sense with InvestNI approach, that it's competing with IDA Ireland rather than cooperating. And I think that that is actually a challenge to the system within Northern Ireland much more.
And you kind of see that to some extent with tourism as well, but to a lesser extent. You also talk of an indifference amongst some politicians and parties. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and what do you mean by that and what impact has it had?
Yeah, I was trying to be polite. I mean, unionism, basically. I mean, and it's quite clear that if you go back in history, that it was unionist objections that prevented Derry having a full-size university. And clearly, although unionism is supportive of parts of the Northwest, for example, Coleraine, it doesn't feel that it's fully on board to me in terms of Derry. And certainly it does not want to see cooperation across the border. Now, clearly that's not true of all unionism. But there are parts of unionism and the dominant parts of unionism in historical terms, in terms of government.
So currently, is it the situation that, and to use the obvious example, we could have the IDA in the Republic trying to attract a business to Lifford, and we could have their counterparts in the north saying no, Strabane's the best option, when really we should have InvestNI, of course, when really we should have both organisations saying, have you considered this region because you have the best of both worlds from an employment section, that the figures would look better because it'd be a bigger catchment area, I presume, and all that kind of stuff. Is it as simple as that, Paul, that we're talking?
Well, clearly that's what Derry City Council or Derry and Strabane District Council and Donegal Council are trying to do anyway. But yeah, I don't feel that state agencies are in the same position. Hopefully things will change in terms of InvestNI having announced yesterday the appointment as chief executive of someone who was a very senior official at IDA Ireland. So perhaps that would indicate a shift in approach from InvestNI. But personally, I think we should go further than that. I think we should have a regional development agency for the Northwest that promotes investment with support, financial support and practical support from the two governments, that actually recognises that it needs to be this coherent push for investment, but also skills development, because the two things go hand in hand. If you don't have the skills, then you don't have the economy.
No, for sure.
And listen, the incomes.
And then you can, the further you dig into it, the more it backs up, even in terms of education. No professors up in the north of the Republic of Ireland, lower spend per student in the local universities. You know, it all adds up and all feeds in, I've no doubt, Paul. I mean, does something like this require a name on it? You know, something like levelling up, where the governments in Belfast and Dublin recognise that, you know what, okay, these regions have been underserved and they need preferential treatment. It's just not something it would be lovely to see, but it's just not something you can imagine happening.
I used to do some work for one of the regional development agencies in England, and I thought they were a really good thing. And I think that the whole of the west of Ireland has a problem that it gets neglected in terms of support. So, I would like to see a Northwest Development Agency that is cross-border, that is given financial backing by the Irish and the British governments.
All right. Listen, Paul, thanks for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That's author Paul Gosling there. Do you agree, disagree? 086 60 25,000. Right, some of your comments here. Great to hear Tony Canavan on the show yesterday. Now Highland interview the head of CHO1 to find out what's happening with recruiting home helps, opening beds in community homes to assist LUH deliver acute care instead of providing the care that CHO1 should be providing. And indeed, it is something we've looked at in the past and will do in the future. Lough Swilly needs help to stop the spread of wild giga oysters that have taken over the flat oyster bed, flat oyster fishing. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago in relation to a study in the area. Can you ask why the breast cancer patients who were diagnosed in the mobile unit are sent to Galway and not treated in Letterkenny? It makes the number of patients in Donegal seem low, and there's a problem with retaining professionals in Letterkenny Hospital as the figures are not reflecting true numbers. How are the positions to be filled in Letterkenny going to be filled when there's a halt on HSC recruitment? That is an issue. I did phone the waiting list. They told me they cannot do anything for me. I need a new hip and knee. I got an x-ray on my shoulder on Friday. I have a medical card. I cannot wait over 4 years to see a doctor about my hip. I got an x-ray on it in June. I was told I need a new hip. Listening to Greg and Highland talking to the Tony Canavan, I work in Letterkenny University Hospital, and the problem with the hospital is the management. They haven't a clue. Unless they get rid of them, the hospital won't change. Ask anyone who works in the hospital, they'll tell you the same. Well, we ask consultants that work there, and they say that often the calls that the management make to the HSC to advance the hospital fall on deaf ears. It's the same hospital in Galway that had to bring in an emergency team that Mr. Murphy was in charge of at the time. If he's not fit for the job, then he needs to go out. But as I say, you speak to people from within the hospital and those that we've spoken to, and that's not their view, nor is it seemingly the view of politicians on the outside of it, that they seem to feel that his hands are tied in that position. Let me see. There was an ambulance behind with blue flashing lights. We got up. This must have been out on the new road there in Letterkenny. There was an ambulance behind with blue lights flashing. We got up on the footpath and he got past us, but then he got stuck at the red light on the Polestar roundabout, and there was nowhere for the traffic to move to let him past. We've mentioned this a couple of times to see if, I suppose, particularly anyone who drives ambulances could give us an insight as to how this work has affected their work. A caller says the needs an amber on the left to Port Road. Another, since the new traffic lights were turned on in Letterkenny, it can take up to 1 hour longer to travel from Medicise to the Clanree roundabout at 4 o'clock in the evening. Wowzers. An extra hour. Interesting listening to the young man. What I didn't realise years ago, and I'm sorry I don't know, is the amount of hormone disruptors that we, our kids, are exposed to. Every plastic item, every plastic toy wrapper, non-stick pans, waterproof clothes, carpet, bedding, clothes, even the plastic electric kettle, all of this is affecting our children and ourselves. Children are developing sooner as a result. I've learned so much from Lane Fitzpatrick, a hormone expert. That's as it relates to a call yesterday. We are joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin's spokesperson on fisheries in the marine, Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin, in relation to the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. Thanks for joining us this morning, Pádraig.
My pleasure, Greg.
I'll just say it to you, as I said to listeners a little earlier on. We've been banging this drum now for a couple of weeks and long before now, but really, you know, since the GPs come out, since the consultants come out, we thought some steam was being gathered. No one seems to care nationally, and we feel for the people of Limerick and surrounds, but LUH back on the headlines 20 minutes this morning across all the papers, News Talk, RTE. And I said earlier on, and I'll say it to you again, I was somewhat disappointed when your health spokesperson was on and ran through the issues around the country. Numerous hospitals were mentioned. There could have been an opportunity to put Letterkenny on the national agenda there, and it wasn't. It was a missed opportunity. So it feels like right across the political spectrum, we're forgotten about up here, Porrig.
Yeah, and thanks to the GPs and the consultants, there has been extensive coverage nationally of the crisis in Donegal. It has been covered on News Talk and RTE, on many national newspapers, thanks to their efforts, thanks to them speaking out very bravely about what's happening. In terms of David Cullinan this morning, he was brought on to Morning Ireland to talk about the funding crisis, the fact that the government have not provided enough money to fund the health service, the fact there's going to be a recruitment freeze in terms of junior doctors. So while he was on, they raised University Hospital Limerick, and he talked about that in detail. He knows it well. And he mentioned a number of different locations around the country. And I spoke to him afterwards. He was very annoyed at himself because he didn't mention Donegal. But I can tell you this for sure. David Cullinan has been up to Letterkenny Hospital. He's coming up again this Thursday to meet with the GPs, to meet with the consultants. And he's very aware of the issues. He's worked with me and Pierce Doherty and the consultants. And I've no doubt following the meeting on Thursday evening, he'll be back at it again. So I have no concern about David's commitments to Donegal. And I know we're going to talk about now what needs to be done in terms of the funding of the hospital, the upgrading of the hospital. So all of that, I have no doubt, will have David's full support on.
Yep, and he'll hear it firsthand himself when he's up here on Thursday, as you mentioned. As it relates to Letterkenny University Hospital, we had an extensive interview yesterday with Tony Canavan, the head of Seattle Hospital Group, who acknowledged all of the issues that were raised. But listeners off the back of that didn't feel that there's any plan. Do you know what I mean? There's no actual plan for Letterkenny University Hospital. There's no plan. It's not even the pipeline for a minor injuries clinic for radiologists to even work remotely to assist with Letterkenny. You know, I don't need to go through it all again. You're well aware of it, Porrig. But whilst there's acknowledgement of the issues up here, there doesn't seem to be any plan to fix them.
Yeah, I think that, and I've been talking to the consultants and the GPs who have spoken out, and like, thank God they have, because the power of a consultant telling the truth of what's happening in the hospital and the under-resourcing, the power of a GP saying that they are terrified to send their patients up to that emergency department is way more powerful than any politician. So like, it's been extremely important that they have done that. But yes, they like, one of the things they were saying is they've announced now they're going to carry out a review of the emergency department. Like, why wasn't that done a year ago, 2 years ago? I mean, we've had the permanent situation of people on trolleys now for years. Why does it take a letter from GPs and consultants to make that happen? So I think the sense in terms of Tony Canavan's interview yesterday was that, and for listeners who don't know, he's the top person in the Seattle Hospital Group, which is all of the hospitals from Galway through Sligo, Mayo, Roscommon, right up to Donegal. And it was clear that there hasn't been a plan. There hasn't been an ambition for Letterkenny Hospital. I mean, I worked last weekend, Greg, and we briefly talked about this last Monday. I worked on collating the figures. So what I have in front of me here now, and I know you have them, is the number of inpatients who come through each hospital in the state and are discharged. So we have all of those numbers. We have the budget that's allocated to every hospital across the state. And if you look at Letterkenny, you know, we're a major hospital. Almost 26,000 inpatients came through the hospital last year. That makes Letterkenny the sixth largest hospital in the state, a major hospital. But then when you look at the actual budget that's allocated to Letterkenny, they're down in 12th position. And that's one of the lowest allocations per inpatient in the entire state.
But Mr. Canavan yesterday didn't really want to look at it like that. He was looking at how much he's spending in the hospitals and said, look, Sligo and Letterkenny, they're bang on equal. Now, when I did point out to him, you know, if we divide it by the amount of inpatients, it's half in Letterkenny what they have in Sligo. He says, yes, I accept that. But the way he views it, and it was clear from the way he was trying to explain it, was that Letterkenny is funded equally to Sligo. But, I mean, obviously, if you have to do more work with the same amount of money, it would be impossible not to have lesser services, presumably.
Yeah, the reason why I've done that work last weekend, and I've done it every year, is because I've been working closely with, you know, senior people in Letterkenny Hospital who have wanted to get a sense of what the big picture is, because they knew instinctively they were being underfunded. They knew they didn't have the same resources in terms of doctors, nurses, beds, as other hospitals doing comparable work. And now it's unquestionable. Now, the other problem is that Letterkenny is a Model 3 hospital, which means that it is obviously resource less than a Model 4 hospital. But if you look at that list, and you have it there, Greg, you can see that there are five Model 4. So St. James's Hospital in Dublin, Talla Hospital in Dublin, St. Vincent's Hospital Dublin, Beaumont Hospital Dublin, University Hospital Waterford. So they're all Model 4 hospitals. Letterkenny has more inpatients than all of those hospitals.
But it's also it's really a Model 3.5, or it should be viewed as that, because it does work. Letterkenny does work in operations and works in areas of cancer care and what have you that other Model 3s don't. So it really should be treated, if not as a Model 4, certainly as a Model 3.5.
Yeah, and every time you have consultants who have ambition in the hospital, who've tried to develop, you know, be it orthopaedics, urology, cancer care, the likes of Michael Sugru, who's done phenomenal work in that whole area. Every time they've tried to do it, they've never been given the support of the SAILTA hospital group, of HSE. If anything, they've been curtailed in the ambition. So you're 100% right. Letterkenny, there's two hospitals that stand out like a sore thumb. There's Letterkenny University Hospital, and there's Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda. Those two hospitals clearly should be Model 4 hospitals based on the area that they cover, the distance. I mean, in the case of Letterkenny, we are about 4 hours away from the nearest Model 4 hospital.
The problem is that you know and I know and everyone knows maybe that the strict criteria for a Model 4 hospital exists. In other words, that it does work to a certain standard and can provide certain services to a certain standard. That is that's the problem, you see. It needs to be treated as a Level 4 hospital, but because of the strict parameters to get that status and to get that funding, it's not in line with the HSE's policies of centre of excellence, etc.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, I go back to the campaign years ago for equality of cancer care. And you know that eventually that led to the radiology unit at Alton McGalvin, which services all of the people on a cross-border basis. So there's no reason why you couldn't look at Letterkenny providing health service on a cross-border basis for people in Derry and West Tyrone, and that could justify then certain specialities. I mean, with a bit of vision, you could make Letterkenny Hospital a Model 4 hospital. That means it would be properly resourced. The other thing, Greg, which is really important, is that it's been pointed out to me by surgeons and consultants at Letterkenny that you now have the introduction of these surgical hubs. So that basically means that if there's some kind of a crisis in the hospital, it means that, you know, everyday procedures and operations are not interfered with and the waiting lists don't grow. These are going to be rolled out across the country. So you're going to be looking at Galway, Waterford, Cork, Dublin, I think Limerick too. So this famous Galway to Dublin line kicks again. I've argued in recent weeks.
There's seven.
Yeah, and none of them, Greg, north of this famous Galway to Dublin line. None of them. So that means that people in Donegal and Sligo are second-class citizens. That means that the waiting lists grow for our people. And in the case of Donegal, we're 4 hours. So what I proposed is that one of these surgical hubs could be based at Donegal Town to service Sligo and Letterkenny. It's pretty much midway between Sligo and Letterkenny. There's about 41,000 inpatients between Sligo and Letterkenny, which makes it the biggest hospital in the state. If you combine the two, that's the biggest hospital. So there's every justification for a surgical hub to be at Donegal Town, service in Letterkenny and Sligo. It means people don't have to go huge distances for procedures. They don't have to wait forever for operations, living in pain. So that even hasn't been conceded. So these are two issues: the upgrading of Letterkenny to a Model 4, the placing of a surgical hub for Sligo and Letterkenny at Donegal Town. There are two issues that SAILTA, but particularly Minister Stephen Donnelly, needs to grapple with and deal with urgently.
Okay. Listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin spokesperson on fisheries and the marine, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. Greg, when was the last time the mainstream media gave the government a hard time? Did dropping the VAT on papers have anything to do with it? Just wondering why they give our beloved government the easy ride every time. I don't think it's to do with that, to be honest with you. I think it's I think it's more to do... I don't want to go into it here on air because it sounds like it's sour grapes, but it's not. But an awful lot of this country is in a very small space on the east coast of this country. People know each other. If you look at a lot of the ministers, who are their staff, former journalists, people involved in the media, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. What are the reasons? Are those the reasons? I don't know. Hi, Greg. News Talk did a slot last week about Letterkenny Hospital and overcrowding. Fair play to News Talk, and thank you very much for that. Greg, more than read the hospital, Sinn Féin spokesperson on health mentioned half a dozen hospitals with problems of overcrowding, etc., but left Letterkenny off the list. How could this be with two Sinn Féin TDs in this country? Well, you heard from Deputy McLoughlin there, because it did stand out a little bit to me. And I know there's a Charlie McGarvey given out to me on Facebook about it, but it did stick out to me like a sore thumb. Sinn Féin TD Pádraig McLoughlin accepted that Mr. Cullinan, Deputy Cullinan, was kicking himself that it slipped his mind at that time. So what I noticed and what our listener noticed has been recognised by the party itself and the person who made the comments. Right, okay. Excuse me. We're joined on the programme now by Independent Councillor Francis Timmins. Good morning, Francis. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you on the programme. Right. The government's promised to examine outlawing the general sale of laughing gas after authorities in Britain said it would become a controlled substance from next month. So this is not something really I've heard too much about, if I'm honest, before this came up. So what is the issue here? Is it widely available? Is it widely abused? Or what's the problem?
Well, first of all, Greg, the gas is used in labour, and it's used in maternity wards, and it's used in catering sector. So obviously the problem is that it's been used by young people, teenagers and younger, for a quick buzz, I suppose, like Tippex, glue, gases that were used back in the 70s, 80s. And ultimately, we saw people died from using these, from inhaling them. And that's my concern, and that's why I've been highlighting it. So, yes, it is widely used in Dublin. I'm not sure up in Donegal whether it's such an issue up there at the minute, but definitely in Dublin.
And you yourself have actually noticed an increase in discarded containers of and canisters of laughing gas.
Yeah, the other day, Friends of the Camac, which is a local cleanup group, they did a stretch of the Camac, which is our canal here, and they found 30 empty gas canisters. These gas canisters are large canisters, Now, my understanding is, you asked me were they widely available, is that they're very cheap online. And, young people now have access, obviously, online and can buy stuff, So they can either get it online or there's people buying it and selling it in their local parks and, making money, obviously, any other drug or any other thing that they can make money out of. But ultimately, this is very concerning because, quick buzz can lead to when you're inhaling something like this. Obviously, you can weak, high blood pressure. We can also see the side effects can be psychosis, can be death. So yeah, it's very serious.
Of course, and it's used in medical terms, it's used in a very controlled way. And the stats back up, 22% of young people using the HSE's Adolescence Addiction Service last year admitted to taking nitrous oxide on occasion. That's a huge jump from 2021. Again, I thought I was kind of across a lot of things, Francis, and This is news to me this morning.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, this is because I believe it's so cheap. I believe it's, and I said it like it's quick buzz, but ultimately the message I'm kind of sending out and I'm campaigning for is that, you know, parents need to know what the children are doing. You know, need to discuss these things with the children and be aware themselves. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of parents of my generation probably wouldn't be as familiar with this type of stuff.
And of course, Francis, I don't want to in any way encourage or promote. I think that's obvious. But, like, is it currently legal to buy here?
Well, there isn't a problem because it's used, as I said, in the catering sector. Uh-huh. So you can quite freely buy it. There's nothing illegal about it. What we do need to do is, besides what England have done in terms of bringing in the legislation that will make it, to sell it will be a 14-year, you can face up to 14 years sentence, and then if you're caught with it, will be 2 years, potential two-year sentence. Now, because England have recognised the danger of it. Now, as I said the other day, I understand legislation, but we've a lot of legislation in Ireland that's not enacted between loads of different reasons. So I'm absolutely supportive of legislation, but I'm also more keen on education.
Yeah, awareness is a key as well for parents and guardians to say, right, okay, because I presume once the immediate effects have subsided and a teenager were to return home, hopefully safe and well, though, as Francis has pointed out, there is a great risk in doing it, it might be hard to know that they had been on that trip, so to speak.
Absolutely. Like I said, dizziness, you know, all these imbalance, all these short-term effects. But like I said, the longer-term effects can be respiratory issues and, of course, like I said, ultimately death. So it's a really serious issue. And it's like, this is one of the things that, like I keep saying, parents and guardians need to know where the children are, what they're doing. And I know that's difficult. I know teenagers nowadays have a lot more freedom than my generation would have had. But at the same time, you know, we have a responsibility to ensure that at the very least people are educated into what they're taking what they're using and what might be the potential of it.
Okay.
So that's it, yeah. That's really, so it's a scary drug at the minute. For it's sure. It's people always are very,
I think it's extra scary when you potentially don't know it's out there and about. But as we said, 22% of young people using the HSE's adolescent addiction service last year admitted to taking nitrous oxide on occasion. Okay, Francis, thanks for helping us raise awareness. I do appreciate it. Have a lovely Tuesday.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's our pleasure. Take care of yourself. Councillor Francis Timmins there, independent. Any of you working out there in the Tidy Towns area, have you across this region come across empty nitrous oxide canisters about? Because it'd be a good indication, obviously. They're probably not being put in a bin. So maybe if you're out and about, as I say, in the Tidy Towns sphere, have you come across this in the Northwest? 086 60 25,000. Greg, I came across a couple of articles on Facebook yesterday where young people have been left in wheelchairs for life after becoming addicted to laughing gas. I can imagine. The HSE talk about the regional hubs. If you live in the north of Inishowen, how can you call Galway within the region? We're closer to Scotland. And that's it. What we need in Donegal is another hospital in the south of the county. Letterkenny cannot cope with the number of patients in the county, according to Bridget. Greg, ask Padraig McLaughlin, is Letterkenny a teaching university or not? How can it function without proper funding or adequate resources? That's come in a couple of times. I'll explore that in a little bit more detail. Hi, Greg. I contacted Charlie McConlogue's office as my husband is waiting on pain management clinic, but they told me Letterkenny Hospital is not giving any information on patients for the foreseeable future. And we're going to get news shortly, potentially as well, too, which we'll bring you on this programme, of another important service at Letterkenny University Hospital, which is being lost, which is going to create headaches for a number of people out there. We're just waiting on some confirmation on that before we bring that to you. My son was discharged from Temple Street Hospital 2 years ago, as he was 16 at the time. They transferred his file to Letterkenny. He needs a blood test every year as it's to do with his blood cells. Now he hasn't had an appointment from Letterkenny, but I've received three letters asking, do we still need the blood test? It's a joke, they say. Someone sent in that from Jenny Freel in the Mirror. That's an article from Mr. Michael Sugru that I referenced. Thank you for that. Hospital comment, it doesn't matter how much money is pumped into the hospital if it's not being run properly and the funds are not being put to proper use. There needs to be an audit of how funds are being allocated and the overall management of the hospital. Just some of the calls and comments coming in. Okay, thank you for that. Keep them coming in to us. We are going to take a break now for the news and obituary notices, but stay tuned. Coming up pretty much straight after 10, we have Community Garda information for you, where you hear the latest news and appeals from An Garda Síochána First here every Tuesday morning. That and so much besides coming up over the next couple of hours. So stay right where you are and keep